Hour number two, Chasing Big Joe, 102.5, the game on this Tuesday. Brian Callahan has given up play calling for the Titans, and who better to talk about that than the head coach at Ensworth High School and also ESPN NFL analyst Tim Hasselbeck, who is on the line with us. Tim, what's up?
What's up, guys? How you doing?
We're doing fantastic. This was not the news we were expecting to hear today. I honestly was, you know, being truthful, not expecting to hear any news today, but Brian Callahan has put Bo Hardegree in as the play caller so he can focus on being the head coach. How big or small of a deal is this truly?
It's a big deal. Look, Brian Callahan's been a play caller. You know, a lot of times guys get opportunities as head coaches because they're coordinators or play callers. So I think relinquishing that is not easy. And you would think that maybe with some of the, I don't know, best way to put it, game management, you know, concerns, whether it's been a challenge, whether it's been, you know, a half, just things of that nature, you know, just making sure you're doing those things correctly. So I think it's a big deal. And I think it's also kind of an acknowledgement of like, look, this has not been going well. And I think it's also important when you consider you've got a young quarterback who's just going to be starting his, you know, fourth game ever. You know, I think that, you know, typically you want like a great understanding between play caller and quarterback. And so, you know, now this is a change pretty early on.
Do you think that this, you know, now kind of buys him a little time, allows him to maybe get some things figured out from the head coaching standpoint, because he doesn't, even though he's going to be involved, like, I mean, you're still the head coach, you're going to be involved in things, but it takes a little bit of that pressure off him so he can focus on some of those situational things like you just referenced?
Yeah, I mean, I think that I think it's an, you know, we're trying to figure out like which, I think it's both things, right? I think it's both, the offense has been struggling, so like let's see if, you know, a different play caller helps. And then I think there's also the side of it, which is, hey, how can I manage the game better? And, you know, maybe not calling plays will do it. So I think it's both things. The question that, you know, we don't know, and we probably never will, is like, what is the driving force of the decision? Is the driving force of the decision, hey, we need you to be able to be, you know, a better in-game head coach? Or is it, look, offense is not doing, you know, as well as we want it to, you know, do. And so let's have somebody else call it and see if that, you know, ends up helping us a little bit. I think it's both things, but there has to be a driver on it.
Yeah, for sure. I did want to throw this out there. A little bit of breaking news out of college football. Oklahoma State and Mike Gundy have parted ways. So Mike Gundy out as the head coach. I'm surprised, but not surprised.
Yeah, I would agree. And like, it's one of the things that's going to happen is, you know, the moving parts in, you know, listen, college football and pro football, we're going to see in terms of coaches getting fired and people moving around. I mean, you just think of at big programs, okay, Oklahoma State, Virginia Tech, you know, places like that, you know, UCLA, like where you have coaching changes already. I mean, we're not even in October. And so when you have coaching changes, you then have player changes, the ripple effect of these guys losing their jobs when they're losing them is, you know, it's just with the way, you know, especially with transfers now, the way it impacts things is just going to be crazy. I mean, it's just wild, the turnover every team seems to have now.
Tim Hasselbeck is on the Chasing Big Joe Show. Tim, I got to give you credit, man. You said it a few weeks ago when I asked you, you know, there are three people in Cam Ward's ear, the head coach / play caller, the OC who does nothing, and the quarterback coach. And I ask you, which of those three should Cam listen to? And you said the quarterback coach. And now that quarterback coach is now the offensive coordinator. Is that good? I mean, him and Cam got a bond, right? They have to have a bond because they do spend a lot of time together.
You would think that you have a bond. But you never really know the relationship unless you're in the room all the time. I mean, the best way to sense a relationship is in terms of quarterback and quarterback coach and quarterback is when you're one of the other quarterbacks and you hear what the quarterback says when you either leave the room or the quarterback coach leaves the room. I mean, that's the reality of it. And sometimes it's, you know, it's implicit trust, and other times it's, I don't know why he's asking me to do that. He doesn't get it. He doesn't understand. He doesn't see it the same way I see it. So, Joe, I mean it. Like, I don't think you really know, you know, until, you know, there's been a lot of time with one another, and there's a true sense of, you know, how each guy, you know, views the other guy. I mean, I don't think that's the case. Now, I do think that, you know, you do spend a lot of time. If you're the position coach, you spend a lot of time, you know, with the quarterback. And so you should have a pretty good sense, maybe better than most, of the things that that guy likes and doesn't like conceptually.
Are you, you know, I was lucky in college, Tim, that my coaches were brutally honest with me and with the team about plays and calling plays and things like that. Is it good to be brutally honest? I mean, this is a shot to Callahan's ego. He's, you know, knocked out of his play calling now. Sometimes you can't sugarcoat things, right? I mean, are you brutally honest with your guys?
Listen, I'm brutally honest with our guys. I hated as a player when I felt like a coach had his mind made up about me, but would tell me, you know, something different. And it was like, look, like I'm, especially later in my career, I'm like, look, I'm 30 years old. Like, go, like, tell me truthfully, like, how you feel. I mean, I'm married, I have kids. Like, you don't need to, like, sugarcoat it to me like I'm some junior high school, you know, player. So that is my approach. I think just being, so like I'll just tell you how I do it. It's like, I will never say something to one player that I wouldn't say to the entire group of players. So if I'm talking to a receiver, like it would be, I would only say to him what I would say to the entire receiver group, just because it's like, look, we have nothing to hide. We're going to be honest about why so-and-so is playing, why somebody, you know, somebody else is not. And you know, the minute, you know, anybody thinks that like they're treated unfairly or anything like that, bring it to my attention and, you know, we'll talk about it. So I think the same thing holds true, you know, in pro football. Look, if you're the head coach and you're the play caller and it's not going well, I got news. Like, there are a bunch of other coaches on that coaching staff who, you know, might see things slightly different and may feel like a different approach is beneficial. And it's, look, if one of them deserves an opportunity to call the plays, then maybe that's the right move to be made. And if it doesn't work, then, you know, there probably ends up being consequences to that.
So Callahan did a breakdown of which of the assistants have special focuses on what, on different elements of the Titans offense. And I'm going to read this off to you, and you tell me if this is kind of a normal practice with teams. The base offense is offensive coordinator Nick Holtz. Third downs, Bo Hardigree. Red zone, wide receiver coach Tyke Tolbert and senior offensive assistant Mike McCoy. Screens, running back coach Randy Jordan. Is that how a lot of teams do it?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people will. I've been on teams where it's like, listen, the tight ends coach would, you know, install the, you know, the third down protections. The receiver coach would, you know, would install, you know, third down passing concepts. You know, first and second down base runs and stuff would maybe be, you know, like a different position coach. Short yardage goal line, you know, the offensive line coach may have a heavy hand in that. And so, like, yeah, there's a lot of work to be done. So it's not surprising that responsibilities are divvied up throughout a coaching staff. Look, it's no different that, you know, the coaching staff that we have here at Ensworth. Like, we, you know, divvy some of the responsibility up. And so I think that – I think the danger in like making all of that public, you know, is, look, when there's certain areas that are struggling, you know, then all of a sudden it's just like, you know, laser focus on, hey, we stink on third downs right now. Like, let's go focus on this coach. Like, and I don't know that that's necessarily fair. So like I think that's where it would be, I think divulging that information of who's where would be, you know, somewhat, that's a little surprising to me. I say that to say, like, when I was in Philadelphia, Brad Childress was the offensive coordinator. Pat Shurmur was the quarterback coach. Pat Shurmur was doing a lot of things other than just coaching the quarterbacks, but no one other than the people in the building knew it. And so I think that's probably the right way to handle it.
Did Andy call the plays?
Still calling the play, even though Brad Childress was the offensive coordinator. And Andy, really, for the most part, has always called plays, even still to this day, with input of other people.
Gotcha. We'll have more with Tim Hasselbeck coming up next here on Chasing Big Joe, 102.5 The Game. Chasing Big Joe, 102.5 The Game on this Tuesday, continuing our conversation with Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst. So, Tim, it looks like the Giants will go to Jackson Dart. They're going to sit Russell Wilson. He was booed a lot on Sunday Night Football. Mm-hmm. They lose, and now Jackson Dart, a rookie, gets his chance to take over. You think this is the right move, or is it you got nothing to lose?
Well, I think it's the right move because I think that he's the future there. I'm a little surprised in the move. Listen, 2 weeks ago, Russell Wilson throws for a career high in yardage, you know, and like throws for 450 yards. So just, you know, 2 weeks removed from that getting benched, you know, when we're just at week four is a little surprising to me. I do think it's always interesting when you listen, especially to broadcast crews like the Sunday Night crew, where it's, you know, it's Collinsworth. They get great access. Same thing with Tirico. And, you know, Dart comes in for, you know, a play here or a play there. And they just start talking about, you know, the excitement from the coaches in the organization whenever his name comes up. And, you know, usually when that's the case, like, you know, they're it's kind of a where there's smoke, there's fire that, you know, there obviously was excitement about, you know, his opportunity. And so it probably just was one of these things that, like, they made a decision they were going to do it. And then when you have plays like they had, you know, on Sunday Night Football, fourth and goal, and Russell Wilson, you know, heaves the ball out of the back of the end zone. Another fourth down play late where, you know, I think he took a sack. Like, and you're not even competing. You're not giving your team a chance. You know, the place is booing. I think it's easy to make a decision at that point.
Were you surprised, not surprised, that Carson Wentz played so well?
I think surprised because, I think Kevin O'Connell does a good job. I think, you know, to have time off, to be a guy that had literally expressed interest of, I might just walk away from football, to play the way he played in terms of, I think there were times where there was good pocket movement and accuracy. I think he played well. And I think the matchup certainly helped because since he was struggling so, you know, bad on offense that, you know, it probably felt like a lopsided field to play on. But I thought for the most part he played, you know, kind of at a starter level. And that's a really good sign for any team that is playing with their backup.
Tim Hasselbeck's on the Chasing Big Joe show. Tim, I find your football knowledge immaculate, and I'm being serious. I'd love to pick your brain for hours. Will you please help me with something? Why? And Chase can roll his eyes in that. I love it. Why is Nick Holtz called an OC, Tim, when he doesn't call any plays? Please, well, okay. Help me through this. I need help on this.
First, Chase is rolling his eyes because he kind of feels like you're trying to become my best friend. You know what I mean? Chase is my best friend.
Yeah.
So, like, I appreciate, you know, the compliments, but it's going to take more than that to affect Chase and I's relationship.
Thanks, buddy.
Good.
So, yeah. Here's what I would say. There is a lot that goes into coordinating an offense. And what I mean by that is, look, you watch your opponent. You know, you try to identify the things that, you know, are good, you know, in terms of the personnel that you have to run against the scheme that you're going to face. So, you know, you're putting a plan together to attack a scheme first and foremost, but then you also have to consider personnel. So you also are putting a plan together where, okay, it matches in terms of what you do, you know, in terms of who you are as an offense attacking a defense, but do they have players that are a problem for us? Like, yeah, that looks good on the whiteboard, but like we can't block JJ Watt. And so because of that, you know, that play that looks good on the whiteboard, that's not something we can do. Like, how do we attack that that individual player? How do we deal with that individual player? So you're doing all of that. You're devising, you know, you're kind of coming up with the plan. And now when you come up with a plan, you got to think of all the scenarios that you need to have a plan for. Short yardage, goal line, third down, you know, and so, you know, you have all of that. You still have 2 minutes. You have other situations that you need to handle. Well, so those, like, you know, all on one person, it's a lot. Then you need to install it. You need to install it to your coaches. You need to install it to your players. And then obviously it needs to get, you know, called during the game. So, you know, to me, like there's a, you know, you're a play designer. You're a planner. You're scheming. You're doing those things, but it doesn't mean you have to be the one that decides, you know, which, you know, third and medium call you get to first. Like that could literally be somebody else, assuming that your staff, you know, is kind of lockstep in terms of how you see the plan.
So now I'm even more confused. So I just
not
know,
surprising.
I think we give titles to give titles, Tim. And I got a problem. He's not a core. He doesn't call anything, right? So why not just call him
the play caller? But you're like, that's the play caller. So like the example would be all those years, Eric Bieniemy, who's the, you know, the offensive coordinator in Kansas City. Like he wasn't calling the plays. Andy Reid was calling the plays. So, like, he's the offensive coordinator, but Andy Reid was calling the plays. Like, and, yeah, do you give people titles in order to, if they're a good coach, to get them on your staff? Absolutely you do, 100%. There's no question that there are coaches that, you know, have titles. And they're, I'm not saying they're not doing a lot of work, but,
right.
Like, that's how you can get coaches off of other staffs, is to say, all right, you were the quarterback coach there. I'm going to make you the offensive coordinator here. But, oh, by the way, like, you know, I'm going to call the offense.
Okay.
Those things happen all the time.
Well, I'm just telling you, you know, I remember a coach, again, I go back to playing, a guy said, hey, you can lie to your girlfriend. You can't lie to football. And I'm like, God, that's so true. I mean, you will get exposed eventually, because if you can't do the job, I just got a problem with being called that, because I think that's how Brian Callahan got this job, which he did not deserve, for being a OC in Cincinnati when he never called a play. Now, Tim, you know this. It's different when you suggest a play, but you're the man in the arena and you got to make that call. That's a whole different world. At least I think it is.
It is different. A lot of times these things are a lot of times, like, what call you're getting to is predetermined. I think we talked about this a couple weeks ago, of like, sometimes it's like you're just coming right down the list, unless something happens in a game where things hit the fan and all of a sudden it's like, okay, we can't get to that play for, you know, whatever the reason. So I hate to say this, there's an advantage. I thought, like, Sunday night's a good example of, you know, the Giants, something defensively where it was like, you know, Philadelphia's response in run game to something that was kind of taking advantage of what New York was doing was really good. That's an in game. You see what they're doing. You call something to counter it. Like, that's really good. That does not happen as often as people think. It really does, especially in pro football when, you know, the book on these coaches has kind of been written about what they like on third down, like who the personnel is, all those things. So I kind of think in some ways it's a little overblown. Now, I think when you, you know, when you are kind of relinquishing something, saying, okay, like, let somebody else have it, I do think, like, you are acknowledging that you are, like, you are not having success doing it the way that you're doing it. So, like, to me, the title and the high, like, you can't lie and this and that. It's kind of why I made the point I did about, like, you know, you're going to have coaches on your staff, and not everybody's oar is in the water the same way. It's just not. Like, and I could say that for every single team that I've been on. Look, when I was in Arizona and Ken Whisenhunt was the head coach, Todd Haley was the offensive coordinator. Todd Haley did so much of the work when I was there. So much of the work, because of how the staff was built. That's the way it went down. And then, you know, Russ Grimm was the offensive line coach, and, like, he had his stuff that he would focus on. So that is how it works on every single staff. And I think when you kind of give somebody else some of that responsibility, I believe it's really as much during the week responsibility as it is game day.
Okay. All right.
Tim Hasselbeck is with us. The old phrase of sometimes it's better to be lucky than good. Philadelphia was definitely lucky on Sunday with that play, but do you think they are good? Are they up to the level that they were last year?
I do think they're good because they're good on offense. They're good on defense. And obviously just look, they've made plays on special teams. I think the other reason they're good, and I had this conversation with Scott Van Pelt on Sunday night, was their quarterback's poise and leadership in all circumstances, I think is wildly impressive. Because they were getting run off the field. They had 33 yards of offense in the first half. They were getting booed at Lincoln Financial Field. I mean, defending Super Bowl champs, like getting booed, just because they're struggling against the Rams. And he's unfazed. Like, he has the expression on his face, how hard he plays. Like, it doesn't change. So I think when you have – kind of that type of resolve and grit and ability to respond to adverse situations, I think that makes you good. I really do. So, that's a good football team. And, there's obviously a little bit of good fortune and some of that stuff. But, to play hard the way they did against a good football team and not flinch, I do think that's a mark of a good team.
Tim, I got to ask, I don't know why I came up with this question. What's the hardest you ever hit at quarterback?
That I got hit?
Yes.
Oh, I've got an interesting one. We were playing the Giants. It had snowed like 5 inches the night before I was in Washington. Spurrier called a bootleg. We were trying to fool Michael Strahan. Like, good idea. He's only been in the league like 15 years. Going to the Hall of Fame. We're trying to trick him. And I turn around, and like before I could even see anything, he just puts his helmet in my chest, lifts me up, and drives me into the ground. Like, hitting the ground hit like so much more, hurt so much more than when he hit me. And I'm not making this up. This is the craziest part about it. So the only reason I don't fumble is because the ball is like pinned between his body and mine. And he's smiling, and he looks at me, and he's like, "Hey, buddy." And my wife, Elizabeth, had just gotten hired at The View. And he's like, "Congratulations on your wife getting that job." I'm like, "What? What just happened?" He literally said that to me. I'm like, and like now you look at it, it's like there's obviously like some type of foreshadowing to his interest in morning and daytime television.
Is he as big? I've never seen him. Is he as big as he was when he landed on you?
Well, you know something. When he played early in his career, he played like over 280 pounds, and then he tore his pec. And he really finished kind of the last, whatever it was, 6 to 8 years of his career playing like under 260.
Wow.
So he really was, you line him up over, the offense's right tackle, and stop the run. And then later in his career, he dropped a bunch of weight and, became a little bit more of a pass rusher.
Oh, what a great story. Congratulating you and your wife on her new job while he pinned you to the ground.
Where am I? Did I get knocked out? Like, why? Like, what? Am I dreaming this? So crazy.
Oh, that's great. Good times.
Tim, appreciate it as always. We will. Who do you got Friday night?
Brentwood Academy Friday night.
Ooh, okay. So that's a
big
one. Let's go Innsworth for sure.
Yeah, transfer portal's open in high school football.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, good luck with that, and we'll talk next week.
All right. Sounds good. See you, fellas.
See ya. Tim Hasselbeck, Innsworth High School football coach and also ESPN NFL analyst, joining us here on the program. We'll react to some of that and much more coming up next. Chase and Big Joe, 102.5 The Game. Tim Hasselbeck, appreciate him for joining us here on the program, and got his reaction. Brian Callahan giving up play calling for the Titans. Do want to pass this along with the Predators playing a preseason game tonight. Congratulations go out to Pete Weber and Terry Crisp, who have been announced as the latest inductees into the Preds Golden Hall. Pecorine surprised them, and I think it was really cool that those two are going to be the next in the Golden Hall.
Is that the only two, or are there more to be announced?
Only two I know of right now.
Okay.
You didn't make it this year.
I'm trying. I owe Sean Henry a little money, so yeah. Maybe if I catch up on that, I'll be back on the Golden Hall. No, good. I learned a lot about hockey from those two gentlemen.
Yep. See, they're more to me. They were always more than just the announcers. Like they were the ones that taught a little, you know, at the time, little Southern town that didn't know anything about ice hockey, even though you know there was some people that did, but most people did not.
Sure.
And they made it enjoyable.
They were the original ambassadors. And I think about those two guys, the fact, and you know them very well, Chase, is that they're so gracious. They are so gracious and nice and make time for everybody. I mean, we've been around people who don't do that. And it really reflects like, oh, man, that guy's a jerk, whatever. Those guys are the best. And yeah. So a lot of hockey that I've learned to love was because of those two guys on the radio and then on TV.
Well, and it's funny, like I put this in a tweet, like I literally have to pinch myself of that I know these guys. Like mm-hmm. It's become more than I just worked with them. Like I could pick up the phone and call either one right yeah. now and they'd yeah. answer and like, hey, what's going on, you know? And that's Terry Crisp is a 3-time Stanley Cup champion. Mm-hmm. Pete Weber, Hall of Fame broadcaster. Pete Weber was a part of the Bills radio team during that run of 4 Super Bowls.
He was.
I mean, he's told me Jim Kelly stories.
And O.J. Simpson stories.
O.J., yeah. I mean, yeah. I mean, so he knows, like, all that stuff.
Yeah.
And so it's just it's really cool. So I'm glad to see it because, you know, the time had come to open a team Hall of Fame or Ring of Honor or however you wanted to sure. put it. But I think, you know, it's okay to recognize that there's not a ton of candidates for it right now. Now, I think there's some others like, you know, Mike Fisher, Thomas Vokoun, Shea's already in it. You got maybe David Legwan. I mean, he's the first draft pick. I mean, there are several other Barry Trotz.
You know, one that you're leaving out that I think should be in there because I think he changed the narrative.
Jordan Tutu?
No.
Who?
Paul Kariya.
Yeah. Yeah,
he came here when nobody was coming here, and they were already good, but he made him better.
Yep,
and it was like, why is Paul Kariya going to Nashville? He's a big free agent signing after the lockout, and I think Kariya was one of those guys. And how lucky is it for you to know Terry? I mean, to know Terry, Pete. You worked with Willie and George, and now me.
Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty big. That's,
what a group.
Right, man.
What a group.
You're lucky, pal. Oh, God.
Wes in Clarksville on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHoney.com, 615-737-1025. I just hope they don't induct Pete at halftime of the next Titans game. There'll be booze.
Oh, well, that won't happen down there. Yeah. They'll speak, too, shockingly, right? They'll get them to speak about
it. Yeah, and – I don't know if Bill Haslam will speak, but Sean Henry, who represents the ownership group, will, as the CEO, he'll speak. So yeah. I'm like, you know. I mean, we heard from Burt Nihil, so I'm glad Mike Keith got Burke. That was good. No offense to Burke, but I think that's one Amy could have given 2 minutes for.
Yeah, that's it.
I shouldn't be that pissed off about it or surprised. But, like, here's the other thing. I have never worked with Mike Keith directly.
Mm-hmm.
He has always been with Titans Radio, which has an affiliation with the other station. Mike Keith, from the first time I met him, he knew who I was. And I was like, wait, how do you know who I am? You know, but he knew who I was. And it was, I think it was at BGA, actually. It was nice as can be. And ever since that day, it has always been, Chase, how's it going? Tell me what's going on. And it's not a throwaway thing either. It's a, mm-hmm. Hey, I legitimately want to know how you're doing. And when we moved to the new time slot, right before we went on the air, I got a text from Mike Keith. Hey, good luck on the new time slot. Enjoy the show. And it's like, that's the kind of guy. So I take it personally because that guy is just like Pete and Terry,
mm-hmm.
is someone that even though – we knew football. We didn't know the NFL.
Right, yeah.
And look, we all grew up together because this was his first big job, you know, as the voice of the team in 1999. Like, right. It became the Titans, And Mike Keith became the voice. I don't even remember who it was those first 2 years with the Oilers, but
it was the guy that called Purdue football, and I forget his name, that passed away.
Oh. Did, was he in Houston?
He was, I don't know, he was here in 97 and 98.
Okay.
And then after that, I'll tell you real quick, funny, and Justin Beasley, if you're listening, you know what story I'm talking about.
He's probably not listening.
We were in Providence, Rhode Island for the playoff game. It was the Titans versus the Patriots. It was January of 18 because they stayed in Providence because it's closer to Foxborough. And we had a special to do that night for Channel 4, and we interviewed Mike Keith for that. So there was a bunch of fans that were coming to the hotel, and there were a lot of Patriot fans there. And a couple came by and said some really smart-ass things to Mike. And Mike Keith turns around and says, "You better keep on walking, boy." And I was like, "Ha ha!" And then Mike was mad. And we were like, "Hell yeah, we're going to rumble in Providence." I said, "What?" And so somebody else came by, and Mike, and they said something stupid. Mike's like, "Yeah, yeah, shut your mouth." And we knew he was – I was like, this is a side of Mike Keith going to kick some ass I had never seen. And we laughed about that. I'm like, if we're going, let's go. I'll go with you, Mike, here in Providence, Rhode Island, take care of this. He was fan. I had respect for him, but that just made me laugh because he took it personal, which he should have.
That's a really great – that could be a question of the day. Like, if you know, who's somebody that if they said, "Hey, I need you to get into this fight with me," that you go, "All right, no questions."
All right.
Like, if Mike Keith turned around and looked at us and said, "Hey, boys, we got to throw down."
I'm on it.
I'm like, all right. If Mike Keith is saying it
– could you
– Jim Wyatt's another one. If Jim Wyatt said – "Guys, we gotta throw hands with these people." I'm like, all right.
Could you imagine if it happened and you know, like through Twitter got out and there's video of me and Mike Keith and Beasley just beating the snot out of Patriots fans? That'd have been the greatest thing ever. It'd been everywhere out there. Mike would take – he takes no jack, man. It would be a lot of fun.
I mean, all three
that.
Of you would have been fired, but it would have been a great video.
Oh, yeah. I'd pick Beasley up and throw him like a bowling ball and he'd knock over some people. He's a little cute guy, 4'2".
Look, I could see Mike being like secretly trained as a black belt and just, you know, roundhouse kicking someone like in Roadhouse.
I've told you for years, our good friend Hope Hines, there's not a doubt in my mind he's got bodies in his backyard.
Oh, yeah.
Not a doubt in my mind that there's bodies in that backyard. He's taking down people throughout the years. But, no, you're right. I mean, Pete and Terry are great. And we got lucky. We're blessed with great announcers in this town and on and on and on. So it's well-deserving. And I know the ownership will stand up and say something for Pete and Terry, unlike they did for Mike Keith on Sunday, which is really sad.
Yep. Coming up next, we get back into the news of the day. Brian Callahan has given up play calling. I almost said that in a really bad way. Has given up play calling for the Tennessee Titans. We'll discuss that much more next. Chasing Big Joe, 102.5 The Game. Chasing Big Joe, presented by the Omni Nashville Hotel here on this Tuesday. We're broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios. Home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership or the Buzz is always about great service. So, by the way, keep listening. We're going to have your chance to win some Predators tickets, I guess, to tonight's game. So we'll be giving those away here in just a little bit. But I'm curious of with this new play calling thing, if I still am taking phone calls on trading guys. Like, if they haven't called, if Mike Borgonzi hasn't called the San Francisco 49ers asking if they're interested in Jeffrey Simmons or Arden Key or anybody, then I would be very disappointed.
Oh, we said it last week. You lose this game, everybody's good to go out there. And well, look, you're 0-3. Chances are you're going to lose. I mean, if you lose on Sunday, you're 0-4. You still got two more games on a road trip. Start selling off the assets and acquiring draft capital. Look, we told you, again, I'm using an analogy. I got bad gas in my car, and the mechanic said, "Let that gas out, put new gas in, and you'll be fine." Look, you got bad gas on the team. I hate to say it that way, but you got bad gas on the team.
They got a lot of bad gas on the team.
Get rid of the bad. I'm not saying Simmons is bad. I'm just saying get rid of what's out there and get assets back. You draft some really bad players throughout the years. They're almost done. And then restart. I mean, knock it down to the what do you call it, the studs? Knock it down to us, to the studs. Example, Harry Truman never spent a night in the White House. Do you know that?
No.
Because the White House was falling apart when he took over the second term. He never spent the second term in the White House.
Is that why he was at Key West all the time?
That's why he's at Key West all the time. So what did he do? They had to rebuild the White House. So we took over FDR in 45. He was there. But the second term in 48, he moved out. They rebuilt the White House. You got to rebuild the White House here. You got to rebuild it. Take it down to the studs and build it back up. This draft class in 25, there's a lot of good promise there. Skowronski's playing good. There's some good pieces there. Just got to start doing more of that, more of that, more of that, and keep going. That's going to take a while. Now, is Callahan the guy? Absolutely not. He's not the guy to go forward. I want a fire and brimstone guy, man. I want a guy to come in there and just on your butt nonstop because that works. I need that. Callahan's not the guy. Build it back up.
So you're comparing the Tennessee Titans to the most iconic and powerful building in the world?
To a part which had to be taken down.
I know, you're right.
But it had to be taken down. It had this franchise at one point pretty damn good.
I'm just disappointed that they got rid of the pool. You know, the White House used to have a pool.
I think it's still there.
The
pool's the press room.
Yeah. They built something on it.
Yeah. So where you do the press briefing, that's where the pool used to be.
Was it an indoor pool?
It was an indoor pool. Oh. It was. So that's where the pool is. But anyway, you got to build it back up and hope you got the right pieces to do that. Now, I think this is a step in the right way. I'm actually looking forward to this game on Sunday, see what Bo Hardigree can do. Here's his opportunity to go out and do something, call some different plays. Now, I'm also curious, Callahan, during the game, I mean, the itch to stay out of the way, can he do that? I'm not sure he can, but maybe he's going to have to.
615-737-1025 is our phone and text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. I feel like a majority of the people are happy with this move, but at the same time still want Callahan out. Now, I'm kind of with you. I'm curious to see how it changes, if it changes, you know, what it looks like on Sunday. You know, is some of the game operation stuff better now that Callahan can supposedly focus on that more because apparently he wasn't before? I don't know.
It could be. Adam Schefter tweeted out a couple hours ago about the change that's happening with the Titans. And some of the responses from, like, non-Titans fans outside the bubble about this are really funny. But here's one that says, all right, Titans fans, Bo Hardigree 2 years ago almost made Aiden O'Connell look like Tom Brady. This is an upgrade at the very least. And he's not wrong. I mean, they improved. The Raiders did when we took over. Now, why Antonio Pierce did not retain him for 24, I don't know. I don't know what happened there. But in the time that he had, he upgraded the Raiders' offense.
Well, it is funny. I have basically said during all this that if you go to the interim, which Mike McCoy, to me, should be the interim coach, that Nick Holtz would get fired along with Callahan and that Hardigree should become the play caller. So
yes.
Brian Callahan's gone ahead and taken care of one step for us, I guess.
Yeah, it's he has, right? And there's a lot of people like, why not just go ahead and get rid of him? If you're going to make that, that's the thing.
I think somewhere either he talked them into it or this was them saying, you know, hey, this is your last opportunity to save your job because they like him. Then I don't know. But I mean, this was kind of decided somewhere of like, hey, we're going to give you one more chance.
Yeah.
Look, I'm telling you right now, if they go down there and he's making boneheaded decisions as a head coach again, and they lose like 41-6 or 41-7, something like that, I still think there is a very good chance that they fly back to Nashville and she fires him.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's Houston and it does sound like, you know, because there was a report that she had been thinking about it. And it sounds like somebody's in her ear saying you make too many rational, emotional decisions. So just, you know, let's this play out a little bit. And she's listening to it right now. But eventually, I don't think she will. And here's the other thing. All the craziness of the last few years has driven them to do that. She honestly should fire him now. Like right now, they're not making the right move because she's made so many bad moves.
You're 100% correct on all that. These memes like that they sent Schefter for this, God almighty.
Firing Robinson in, you know, halfway through the season when you're leading the division, bad move. firing Vrabel at the end of the season after setting him up for failure with Carthon and everything else, I think was a bad move.
Mm-hmm.
Firing Carthon at the end of the season when you did, good move. That was the right move. You did a good thing. So, I mean, it's like now you can't let the bad stuff and the bad decisions prevent you from making good ones.
I don't.
If you lose this week, he should still be fired as head coach.
Yeah, you're 0-4, and you're the worst team in football, and there's no really light at the end of the tunnel. And you got the two more games on the road, then you come back. We talk about it. You got Vrabel, you got to go to the Colts, and you got the Chargers come to town. So nobody's feeling sorry for you right now. But we knew this. I think most of us thought it was a bad hire 2 years ago.
I'm not going to go that far. I think there were people that were intrigued by it, but they were.
Let me ask you, why were you intrigued? I'm curious.
I bought too much into who he had worked with.
As smart as you are, I'm curious to know why you were intrigued by this, because you're like me.
Yeah, no.
And I'm like, this is not good.
I was too hung up on he'd worked with Burrow, he'd worked with Manning, he'd worked with, you know, and then some of the coaches that he had worked with. And I was like, well, surely he's learned something along the way and will be a good coach. So that's why I was bought into. Here's the other thing. I was bought into, you just went from a defensive coach, you need to go offensive coach. I don't know why that is kind of a rule or, you know, what people do, but that was where I was. And they went polar opposite. You go from a hard ass to, yeah, you know, I'm doing a good job. Everybody's doing a good job. You're doing a good job.
All right.
I mean, like that. So I drank the Kool-Aid.
Yep. When I looked at that, and a lot of people around here were tooting his horn, and I was like, he never called a play. And now he's the head coach and play caller. It just didn't seem like it was going to work out. And it has it here. And so now giving up play calls, working on being the head coach, does that mean he's still going to override Bo Hardigree and call for 72-yard field goals and take two timeouts and try to find the K-ball and everything else?
I think if he does that, then that'll make it pretty easy. I think he'll get a call into the office. But, all right, you're out.
He is 3-17 as a head coach.
Yep.
One game at Nissan Instead. This is the worst he's ever been.
He's 3-17, and Wisenhunt was 3-20.
3-20. Yeah, three. I'm telling you, man. It's
so he
eerie.
Went 2-14 the first year, and then 1-6 before he was fired.
Yep. And then I remember talking to some people over there in Titans building. It's like they knew it was coming, but they didn't know it was coming. Like, all right, yeah. And then happened, like, what?
That was her first move. That was the coup d'etat where she takes over and becomes the controlling owner. And then she's like, get this mess out of here. And, you know, Rustin Webster knew he was dead man walking at the end of the year.
It was.
You know, so, and look, those were the right moves.
Can I tell you a funny Rust real quick? It takes 10 seconds. Yeah. I sat next to Rustin Webster at a Vanderbilt. Rustin Webster at a Vanderbilt football game. We're on the top level in that tiny press box up there, and I'm sitting next to him, and he's asking me about players. And I have no – this is like 2014. I have no clue who these players are.
I didn't either.
Right? What about this guy and that guy? I'm like, oh, that guy showed some promise. I had no idea. Because nobody was talking to him, and he recognized me from TV, and I'm like – oh, my God, man. This is the worst. And finally, I just excused myself and went and sat in the stands. I'm not going to do that. I had the one Vanderbilt press box hot dog I'm allowed, which is still the greatest sports story of all time, and I got out of the press box and went and sat in the stands. Do you know that story?
Which one?
The hot dog story?
No.
Okay.
Go ahead.
So we're at a game one time, and Brian McKeegan, if you listen, you know that, and I'm Hope Hines is there. And this is Vanderbilt University, right? More money than you know what. And we're going through the line, and Hope Hines takes two hot dogs. And one of the sweet elderly workers in the press box grabs Hope's hand and says, Hope, you're only allowed one hot dog. And Hope, look, he's got two hot dogs on his plate. And Hope says, well, you better go get more hot dogs, and walks off. And they're trying to stop him over one hot dog. It's one of the greatest moments of all time in a press box over a hot dog. And Hope was like, yeah, well, you better get more
hot dogs.
And that's it. He walks away. And they were so mad, so upset that Hope took two hot dogs. We're not talking ribeye steaks.
No,
it's a hot dog.
I would have had some choice words too.
Yeah, it's Vanderbilt. Now, had it been Chase McCabe's house, I get it. Or Nick Frazier's little side hustle, I get it. It's Vanderbilt. Ever a hot, and that right summed up Vanderbilt athletics for many years. Thank God for Clark Lee.
Oh, that's pretty good. 615-737-1025. We'll take more of your calls. Adam, hang with me. Coming up next, Chasing Big Joe, 1025 The Game.